Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. On this Monday after Veterans Day, more military veterans are working, but not at jobs that harness their skills. Veteran unemployment looks better than it has since the recession. It's at 3.4%. But when companies hire, they're often hiring vets for jobs like security guards, truck drivers, lower-level healthcare positions. That's what the Census Bureau reports. And companies too frequently don't take the skills learned in the military into account. We're going to talk this hour about why that is and how to work around that. As our guests join us, I'd like to hear from you. If you've served in the military or someone in your family is a veteran, how does the jobs picture look in your household? And how do you think corporate America views military service overall? So I want to hear your own experience within your family, if you're a veteran yourself. What was it like coming out of the service and finding work that really applied to the skills that you possessed? Overall, how do you think corporate America really sees military service and in fitting in to their corporate structure? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Sheila Jessen is with us. She's a military recruiter at Cargill and with me in the studio. Sheila, good to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Carrie.
Nick Armstrong is a senior director of research at the Syracuse University Institute for Veterans and Military Families and with us from Syracuse, New York. And Nick, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sheila, you gave me a little background before we got on the air, and I found this pretty interesting. You created the role at Cargill. Is that right?
Yeah, so the role was created and I applied for it, but then it was a new role. So as I came into that role in 2014, I was kind of given the flexibility to create what it needed to be.
You came into it having served in three different branches of the service. Remind me.
Correct. So I started out in active duty Air Force right out of high school, and then I did 8 years in that.
Right out of high school?
Right out of high school.
Wow.
Yep. Then I ended up in the Army Guard as I got out, became a recruiter with them. And then 2 years later, transitioned to the Air National Guard as a full-time recruiter. So I've got about 14 years of recruiting under my belt.
So you had a lot of military experience when you got out of the military, but not corporate experience,
no.
Right? You were coming into the job market brand new to that. What'd you discover about that?
So it was a bumpy ride. It wasn't a straight path to Cargill. It took me a couple of years to find the right position, and I think that's one thing that veterans find very common. I had a lot to learn.
Before you go on to that, what was bumpy about it?
The first job I had was a defense contractor job, which kind of fell into my lap.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a 3-year contract. And then 9 months later, the contract was cut by sequestration. And so a lot of times we, as veterans, we're used to getting a job and, you know, being in the military, it's stable.
Right.
Now we're in this unstable environment. So we have to learn how to adjust to that.
And Nick, is that something that we're going to end up talking quite a bit about this hour, do you think? Just the expectations in corporate America and how different they are, perhaps, in the military or not? You tell me.
Absolutely. You know, it's a big adjustment, you know, leaving the service and everything from pay to role and leadership expectations.
How was your – you served in the service as well, Nick. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Sure. I served on active duty in the Army in the early to mid 2000s. Spent some time in Iraq and Afghanistan and the Balkans in and around 9/11. Transitioned out initially thinking I'd go into an engineering role.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't feel quite right. Was kind of searching for you know that sense of purpose you have while in the military.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went back to grad school, but then ended up here at the university unexpectedly in a research capacity and now helping to support veterans in their employment journey and other issues related to transition.
You know, you sound perfect for the gig you've got, but I also hear the same kind of seeking and searching that Sheila went through right out of the service. Is that fair to say?
Sure. Yeah. It's a big adjustment that first you leave the service with such great exposure to not just the technical skills you get in the job that you perform, but also all the soft skills with respect to leadership and all the responsibility you're given at such a young age. You know, leaving the service, you often think that you're gonna walk into something in a that's comparable in civilian life, and oftentimes that's an adjustment.
Rightly so. Okay, we have a lot of people on the phone line, so let's go to the calls to Mary in Marshall. Hi, Mary. Sounds like you have some experience with this. What's it about?
Yes, I do. I was in the Air Force for 23 years, active duty, and I was really unprepared for the civilian world. You know, we get trained for management roles. We're trained in leadership. We're trained to deal with a multitude of problems that come up with our troops.
Right.
Because a lot of us were probably over a troop or a squad of 25 people, and they're all young people. They all have different problems, and you have to deal with that. Plus all the management, I don't think that corporate America is, they're disconnected with what the military knows.
All right. I mean, what I hear you describing, Mary, is, as you said, people management and a lot of troubleshooting. You know, Sheila, where do you think the disconnect is from, I did this in the military, I know how to do this, to the way that, you know, an HR person at a company would see that?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges is that as you're leaving the military, it's very hierarchical. So it's a very strict ladder of progression.
Uh-huh.
And in a corporation, it's more matrix. So you may not be able to come back in and manage 25 people again. And also your management is going to be different. You're not going to be managing their personal lives and their challenges, where in the military you do find out about if they got a speeding ticket or a financial, you know, problem. So it's an adjustment.
Okay, but I want to understand, is that because the company does not see that? I mean, you've said there are differences in the way you would manage people, but it's still managing people, and it's still doing, as I suggested, a lot of troubleshooting. Because is this because many people in the company haven't served in the military, so they don't understand what that management is really like, what the quality of that management is?
I think there is a little bit of a misperception of what kind of value the individuals bring into the table. But it also depends on the type of role that you're applying for.
Okay.
And is it going to be a match? And so, there is definitely values that people bring to the table. It's finding that right match, finding that right role that matches your experience. And so that's a two-way street, where the candidate needs to find the right role that will give them the type of enrichment and fulfillment in the role. But also the company has to understand the value on the resume. So that's kind of that marketing piece of helping to market yourself,
right? We can talk more in depth about that. But Nick, what did you hear in Mary's own experience with that? With this,
Just in reacting to this, the discussion here, I think there is a big, an increasing lack of familiarity with military service, and a lot of that's just changing demographics. Fewer people serve today. Less than 1% actually serve, and as the veteran population continues to age, you have fewer civilian folks inside companies that have that familiarity. And I think that's particularly a challenge for smaller and mid-sized companies.
I mentioned the veteran unemployment number lower than the national unemployment. Is that, Nick, about a combination of a tight job market and some successful programs that, are finally, bearing fruit 9 or 10 years into them? I think the Obamas set up that joining forces, which really incentivized companies to hire. So I want to understand the progress that has already been made.
Sure. There's been quite a bit of progress. Obviously, the economy is in a much better place than it was, following, the economic downturn. I think around 2011 is when we saw veteran unemployment at its highest rate.
Right.
But that employment rate, while it has gone down, certainly there's been a lot of private sector engagement in the issues. There was the creation of the 100,000 jobs mission, which is now the veterans job mission, because mm-hmm. they've hired over three times that many since then. As a coalition, these major Fortune 500 company groups, there's other coalitions driven through or supported through the U.S. Chamber's efforts. Now you're starting to see that pop up in local and regional markets. For example, in Pittsburgh, there's an emerging collaborative of veteran employers and several other communities. So that's all very positive, and a lot of great programs that are underway now. We're actually providing one of those called Onward to Opportunity, where we're delivering programs on and in and around military installations that are industry-specific skills training and matching folks to employers that are looking to capitalize on veteran talent. And so all that is good. But going back to the unemployment rate you mentioned, that doesn't tell the full story.
Right.
If you start to peel back the onion and really look into subgroups of veterans, particularly younger veterans, those that may not have a four-year degree, there are some differences in higher unemployment rates.
That's actually, you've brought up a good point there. So let me mention, if you've just tuned into the show, it's a conversation this hour about veteran employment and underemployment. Now you hear us talking about the fact that the unemployment rate for veterans has improved a lot, has decreased a lot. But mm-hmm. many veterans are underemployed. And as Nick just suggested here, if you're a younger veteran, you may be having some issues here that veterans with more experience are not having. So I'd like to hear from veterans across the board about what it's like when you go out to get a job in corporate America. Do you feel like you're underemployed? What do you attribute to that? And if you're a younger veteran, maybe you've spent, I don't know, 4-8 years in the military. You've come out. You're struggling to find a job that kind of pays you for the skills that you have. Tell us about your experience as well. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, it's at Kerry, KerriMPR. To Amy in Fargo, North Dakota. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Kerry. So the very first thing I'll say is that it's primarily the most difficult for people that have had to do schooling, especially for the military, and then very quickly maybe had to get deployed right after.
Uh-huh.
That seems to be, you spent 2 years maybe out of college where you were not able to get a job because you were traveling, you're finishing up the different schooling that's required, and then, you were gone for a year. So it's incredibly difficult to get back into that into that mindset and to have employers look at you as a viable candidate because you can't use your experience that you have, which may have, a lot of responsibility. But now all of a sudden you're kind of thrown into this world where people can't really value that or they don't know how to put a price tag on that.
Yeah, makes sense.
How much to pay you for that. The other thing I'll say, especially, there's still a stigma out there. We don't know what they've been through and are we going to have personality clashes or that, the quote-unquote PTSD issue. So there's definitely some of that aspect. And then for females, I think also people don't really know how to deal with that. You don't quite fall into a category of traditional, but, you tend to maybe butt heads a little bit more with other colleagues. So.
Boy, Amy, you've raised a lot of good things that I want to get to. And Nick, I want to take on the PTSD issue here, because when we were talking about this, I was hearing from some veterans on email that there's just this misinformation out there about how many veterans are affected by PTSD. And by the way, how PTSD affects you individually. It doesn't make you unqualified or unable to work in a certain position. And then we had this news event in California last week where the former Marine who was suffering from PTSD was involved in that shooting. So can you bring us some facts on this, how we can better understand this?
Sure. I do think that there's been, over the last decade or more, we describe it as the hero and victim narrative mm-hmm. of either a veteran is put up on a pedestal and a hero, or you know, unfortunately they're labeled or stigmatized as a victim, and you see that play itself out through different media stories. The VA's National Center for PTSD publishes stats right off of their website to help put it in context. Just looking at that, the average American, they're saying about 8% of all Americans at some time, at some point in their lifetime, will experience some type of traumatic event. And then if you put that in context with military veterans, right now the current generation is somewhere in the middle teens, and that varies year over year in terms of their estimates of it. But the fact that everyone's dealing with a traumatic experience is simply not the case. And also, the stigma that those who may have those diagnosis cannot go on and function
right
effectively in the workplace is just not it's just not a thing.
Sheila, I put this in with a lot of misunderstanding about mental health across the board, right? Many of us do not understand that. But then you add this misassumption about what PTSD really is. What do you say to Cargill about this? And then what do you say to people who are applying for work there when you're talking about maybe some mental health challenges with them? How do you deal with this?
Yeah, so in the hiring process, we generally do not discuss mental health issues. We don't screen for that. Mm-hmm. However, when as a veteran myself, I'm not fearful of that stigma. I don't come with that stigma because I know what the statistics show. But I think that it's important that as employers we give every candidate a chance and not allow those stigmas or those biases to enter into our mindset as we're making decisions.
But Sheila, you can say that, but yeah. I mean, what you're really getting at are views that people hold that they might not necessarily be open about, but which influences their behavior. And part of that behavior might be hiring.
Yeah.
So I'm a manager at Cargill. I'm not going to tell you I'm not going to hire somebody with PTSD, but I just might make it difficult for that person to get through the hiring. You know what I'm saying? So how do we get at the more subtle?
Yeah, we do hiring manager training to try to reduce unconscious and conscious bias. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about PTSD. It's also about things like thinking that military people only follow orders. That's
a misunderstanding
because even though that seems to be like what we see in the movies, it's really about being very nimble and working with ambiguity. And that's a really big value at Cargill, is being able to be adaptable and nimble and work with ambiguity. So I think that the more training that we're doing as far as bias can help us eliminate that danger of not selecting somebody based on a
misassumption. Stereotype.
Correct.
Is basically what. Yeah, Nick, in some ways, popular media has not been advantageous when it comes. I mean, it's brought awareness about PTSD, but it's also given us this perception that you can't function if you're suffering from PTSD. And maybe I shouldn't even use the word suffering if you're dealing with it.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Back to Sheila's point, too, this, idea that folks can't follow orders, it's no surprise that veterans have, for decades now been over-indexed, meaning they're more likely to be small business owners and entrepreneurs. It's like there's a almost a calling, if you will, for veterans to enter the field of entrepreneurship, largely because the experiences they have, especially at the small unit leadership level, of being put in positions where you're given a mission, you got to figure it out. You're operating in constrained resources, and that's like the textbook definition of what it means to be an entrepreneur. And that's a big asset
point
that I think employers would want.
Let me take a call here from James in Wayzata. Hi, James.
Hi, this is James. I met you with Cargill, so I wanted to kind of mention something. As we talk about, as a leader within Cargill, mm-hmm. one of the big things we want to make sure we clarify is that when we talk about military leadership, it's been very structured, very standardized, while as we think about leadership within different corporations and organizations, they operate leadership very differently.
Uh-huh.
So when we think of a manager, it does not always translate to another company. Just as if I were at Cargill, it doesn't guarantee that I can walk into Microsoft and get another management position. just because I have immense leadership expectation and skills and experiences. So that is also one of those things that we need to make sure that as we talk to our veterans population is that, yes, you have leadership experience, but does it translate and how do you translate is what's important.
So what would, James, it sounds like you've thought a lot about, do you have military experience as well? Or
yes.
Yeah. So what would be, if you were sitting around with some friends who were looking for work, who had military experience, what would you be saying about that leadership part of it?
I would definitely say find out what is the leadership style of the organization.
Okay.
Because you have to understand the organization. Just like, as I tell any of my veteran friends, you have in the military, you understand your enemies before you go after them. So no different in doing your research, understanding the organization, the way they function, how they lead, what is the style overall, which is what's important. And so doing your research and understanding that first.
Sheila, does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I think definitely doing your research is important. I think about when we're talking about military people that are having trouble getting employment, oftentimes it's those transitioning military, that 200,000 to 250,000 that get out every year. They have a huge learning curve, how to communicate, how to research companies. When I was looking for a job, I wanted a company that had great values and great mission because I'd come from an organization that had that. And I really found that at Cargill, they have 7 business principles that aligned with my military core values. So I think that looking at the company structure, the values, what they're doing in the world, how they're doing it, doing that extra homework, it's not about just finding a job. It's about finding a mission, a new mission.
So as much as the companies that were going to interview you for a job were looking for specific things, I mean, you weren't passive in that. You were also saying, I'm not sure I want to work there, but I do want to work for that company because they've got the mission that fits what's important to me.
Absolutely.
I think that changes the way you go out into the job search world, doesn't it?
Yeah. If you're a more targeted approach instead of a shotgun approach, you're going to have more better results.
And really more thinking about, I want something that is as fulfilling for me as lending my talent to this company will be fulfilling for them.
Absolutely. And I think the companies will hear that as you, they can tell what research you've done and what value you're going to bring to them.
Nick, what do you say to vets about this, or how do you think about that?
Well, I think Sheila just hit the key word here is in value, and it's not just translating your skills, but translating your value to the company. And every place you apply to, like the caller just mentioned, you know, they have their specific norms and ways of how they conduct their business, and being able to communicate and translate your experiences in a way that resonate and demonstrate how you would be an asset to that company is key. And that's the big message that we try to push to those that we advise.
Okay. Call here from Jen in Minneapolis. Hey, Jen, thanks. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thank you so much. I just wanted to call in. I'm a female vet. I was in the Army in the late 80s, and I'm much older now, and I own a business. But I work with female vets through the organization SCORE and also through the local VA.
Right.
I think that one of the commonly held misconceptions is that men and women leave the military and have the same kind of experience. You know, there's, even though you wouldn't want to overgeneralize, men seem to follow a sort of narrative arc where they go in the military and maybe their lives get kind of straightened up. They learn leadership skills. They come out and that looks good on their resume in many ways, despite the difficulties that they have. But women come out of the military a much more hodgepodge group of people who basically have just come out of a structure where they were taught to submit more so than anything else. And I know, again, I don't mean to overgeneralize, there are many powerful and successful females in the military, but the ones that end up looking for jobs and struggling are the females that leave with these very different circumstances and assumptions. When people would see that on my resume, they wouldn't say, oh, wow, that's great. They would look puzzled and say, well, why did you do that? Why were you on the bomb squad for 4 years? What does this have to do with anything?
So, wow, this is super interesting, Jen. Wow. So, okay, so I just want to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying, because this is multidimensional here. Women coming out of the military are seen in a different, having acquired different skills and having had to act differently within the military than the narrative that we put up on men who are coming out of the military. Do I have that?
That is exactly right.
Stay on the line here, Jen. Sheila, what do you think of this? So here's Sheila, who's spent quite a bit of time in the military. What do you make of this?
Yeah, so Jen, thanks for your call and for your comments. And I think that, you know, we're about the same era when I joined in the early 80s as well. And, you know, every woman veteran is going to have a different experience and different color as they come out. I think for me, joining at the age of 18, it really helped build me into the person that I am today, because I was forced into a male-dominated environment, you know, by choice, I went into it, but I learned how to operate in that, and so I feel like when I separated, I was able to handle myself very well in a still a male-dominated corporate environment, because
is the reality.
I have experience doing that. I wasn't just in college. I was actually living and breathing in an organization that was at that time probably 15% female, so I felt like it gave me an advantage when I came out to be able to stand up for myself and not submit, but to, like, be powerful.
Jen, how does that sound?
Well, that would be my personal experience as well, but I guess I'm talking more about the other female veterans that I work with through mm-hmm. SCORE and through the VA hospital. You know, the Me Too military thing is a really big deal. Mm-hmm. I was the only woman as well in EOD. There were no other women around me at that time. There might have been 15% total women in the military, but I think that there just is a different subset of women. We just can't assume that this narrative that I'm so happy that Sheila had a positive experience when she separated. I've done very well for myself, too, but I meet a lot of other people that haven't.
Right.
And I just think it's important to consider the experiences of female vets possibly as a unique situation relative to this overall story that we're telling about finding jobs.
So, Jen, I'm interested in what you did between leaving the military and then starting your own business. I mean, did you, Sheila described this as a little bumpy. Nick, it sounds like, had a couple of false starts. Same experience for you?
You know, I got out of the military and I knew that I wanted to go to college immediately. So I went and got my undergrad and I worked in various corporate environments. And, you know, it wasn't really any skill set that the military had given me. To be honest, I was already probably like Sheila, a strong and determined person.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a number of corporate jobs where, for me, it was kind of a blip on the screen. I mean, my original fantasy of getting a job at a police department because I had been EOD wasn't going to happen, but I went on and had a lot of successful and interesting jobs before I started my own business.
I see.
So it isn't like I was just, you know, laying around during that time or anything, and I didn't really have a hard time, but I've met so many other women that have had a hard time. And in fact, just at the state fair this year on Military Appreciation Day, I met a woman who was running a program here in Minnesota to help female vets find employment. And her program had been defunded about a week before we met at the state fair.
Jeez.
So I'm just saying, I think that there are possibly some different considerations where women are concerned.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. You know, this is Sheila again. I would say that, you know, one of the challenges about women veterans is that society doesn't see women as veterans. And so since they don't, we don't see ourselves as veterans. So I think one of the things that women veterans can do for themselves is go out and find and use those resources that are available to all veterans, because we tend to not do that. So go to the VA hospital, go to the workforce center, use those benefits that are available to all of us.
Yeah. So I've been reaching out to veterans of all experiences here this morning, but also asking to hear from you if you're a younger vet, served recently, what's the job market and experience look like to you? And given what Sheila and Jen have just introduced in the conversation, I'd like to hear from you if you're a woman veteran. Is it true that we're a culture that doesn't really see women as veterans? And what does that mean as you get out into corporate America to look for work? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at CarrieMPR, where Trevor says, I noticed that people tend to treat veterans like this like-minded, homogenous demographic. I think we're hearing why that's kind of the wrong approach. He says that can't be further from the truth. They're not a monolith. They're a very diverse group of people with varied skills, views, and career aspirations. Back to our conversation now. Sheila Jessen with us from Cargill, where she's a military recruiter, and Nick Armstrong, senior director of research at the Institute for Veterans and Military Families in Syracuse, New York. I want to go to Lee in Sioux Falls. Lee, I know you've been waiting. Thank you so much for staying with us. And I'm curious about what you have to add.
Hi. So when I was in the Army, I served in the Ranger Regiment, and within the Army, the unit is sort of deified.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went out with a sort of, I would call it a sense of entitlement and no small amount of narcissism into the workplace.
Got it.
And what I found was is that my skills didn't translate. And I think oftentimes we speak about leadership as though it is an end in and of itself. But the problem was is there's sort of an increasingly technical marketplace. And sure, you can lead other men perhaps in a combat setting, but just to use your own guess, for example, one works at Cargill, which is heavily influenced by finance and engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And just because I can lead people in a combat setting doesn't mean I'm necessarily well equipped to lead, say, engineers in a feed mill. And so it was important for me, and I had to end up going to college and getting an education in order to contribute to a company, because like it or not, leadership in and of itself doesn't mean much if you don't understand the underlying business.
A really important point. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that's where I was sort of at a disadvantage. And it took me several years to kind of come to grips with what that meant and spend a truckload of money on an education. But that's probably a discussion for a different day.
Before I let you go, Lee, I think what you said about coming out of the military and that elite unit and having to adjust to the idea that when you got back into civilian life, people were not going to treat you, I guess, particularly special as you had been in the military. People were not going to acknowledge what it really meant to be a Ranger. How would you put it?
They did to a point, but I think the question is whether or not they will acknowledge it in a way that can lead to gainful employment and money making.
Mm.
And it did not. I think they understand it kind of, sort of, but when it comes to employment, the devil is in the details. And I don't think that ever really kind of came to fruition in any meaningful sense.
I'm really glad you stayed with us and you called in, Lee. Nick, to what Lee was saying about leadership, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I mean, that's like making that case to an employer is important. I think he also brought up an important point with respect to it, like having recognizable credentials that go along with that leadership and being able to not just articulate the value, but have whether it's a credential or a degree, as he mentioned. He brings up an important aspect that the workforce is changing rapidly. And over the next 10 years, a lot of positions are going to require more and more, skill sets related to data science and other things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's a big piece of the puzzle that we're trying to tackle.
Sheila.
Yeah. And Carrie, I think that's great points that Nick is making. I think one of the secret sauce of finding a job after you separate is that networking piece. And we haven't really talked about that. But I think, figuring out where do I fit in and how do you find that out? You need to talk to people. And I think with technology these days, it's very easy to sit behind our computer and apply for jobs all day online. But unless you get out and actually start talking to people, networking, letting them understand what value you bring, and then learning about their company and figuring out where do you fit, that will help you make that match.
Are you saying you're networking among your fellow military vets who are in company, or you're really widening your network?
Certainly, that's a good place to start when it comes to if you're in the Guard and Reserve, you have a huge network of people that have jobs in other companies.
Right.
But you got to start somewhere. So start with your family, start with your coworkers, start with your military friends, and branch out. And then you're going to start making those contacts in the companies that you're targeting. And that's really going to help you get on their radar.
Nick, I'm curious about how you interpret a study that I was looking at as I was preparing for the show that found that 43% of veterans are leaving their first civilian job after having only been there a year. I mean, that may say something about expectations of the veteran themselves, but something else is going on there too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a mixed story. On the one hand, we're seeing that veterans find that first job and some move on to newer and better positions with other companies. On the other, those are leaving due to a bad fit or just that initial learning of what it's like to be in the civilian workforce. And so it's kind of a mixed bag. And on the one hand, I think it's it's helping employers understand the skills and talents that veterans bring and how to actually make the best of those so there is a good fit in the firm, but also in terms of helping transitioning service members, even before they take the uniform off, be better informed about the opportunities and what it's actually like in these different types of roles, and arming them with the information about what they're about to jump into, or if they need to go and get another credential or use their GI Bill for higher education.
Yeah, a call here from Carter in Brooklyn Park. Hey, Carter. Hi.
Hey, how are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Glad you called. Yeah. What are you thinking about?
Awesome. Well, you know, when I had first gotten out, I was very proud to be a vet and had a license plate that said maybe veteran. And people would come to me and be like, you know, tell your husband thank you for serving. And it would always rub me the wrong way.
Because
what? It was like, nah, it wasn't my husband. It was me. And then they give me the look because I don't look what you would think that a woman military person should be, nor do I act like what they think she should be. And so when they keep talking about this monolithic, we're all the same. And it's like, no, we're not. We all joined for different reasons to be in the military. Mine was not because I was super American. Mine was I grew up in Compton and I didn't have any other resources and I couldn't go to college. And this was my only way to get out of that place was to go into the military. And then implementing the trauma of growing up in a very violent community and mm-hmm. then going into a military setting was just very traumatic. And so now to come back out and have people not even acknowledge that it was you who was the one who served, it was your husband.
Carter, I'm curious about what the job search was like once you got out of the service. Is some of what we've been saying this morning fitting with your own experience?
Well, it has a lot. It goes down deeper just into the job searching experience. It's got to a place where I'm not even able to work for another employer. I had to open my own business to use the skill sets that I needed. Like the leadership abilities that I learned from the military did not transcend into civilian world. You know, you're a little too bossy. You're a little too aggressive. Do you know what I mean? They weren't willing to take orders because they didn't know the mission statement. And most companies don't have a mission statement that most military people can get behind of. Theirs is about making money.
Well, some of this is about you being a woman, too. What you just said about you're too bought, you know, you're going to face that no matter what. Now lay the military part of that on top of that. I can see why you were facing some challenges. But you opened your own business in the end.
Yeah. So now I own my own company and hire vets. And so it's worked out really well for me.
I'm so glad you called. You couldn't see this, Carter, but Sheila was nodding with the not really what understanding how particular leadership from a woman is, it can be understood in corporate America, Sheila.
Yeah. Carter's comments really resonate with me as far as being confused that I'm not the veteran, that my military license plate must be my son or my husband.
Uh-huh.
So that happens to me all the time as well.
Really? Still?
Absolutely.
Jeez.
Absolutely. I've been at the VA hospital and had a fellow patient ask me if I was a medical salesperson. I said, no, I'm a veteran. But we don't look like a typical veteran at the VA hospital, so I understand it.
You mean just because you're not a man?
Right, yeah. I mean,
Only that?
I mean, I don't know, but I think that goes back to that societal perception of what veterans mean. It's usually a man in our mind. So
jeez.
We face, as women veterans, we face that a lot. But the other thing that she was talking about is like, I struggle with this, too, with this direct communication. So veterans get accused of having too much direct communication in the new corporate environment. And so how do we adjust our style?
Okay, what does that mean?
So
too much direct communication.
In a military setting, direct communications is a good thing. It's what's expected because you don't have a lot of time.
I think it's a good thing everywhere.
I think so, too. But I think that we might appear to be too authoritative in our leadership style. We need to bring it down to learn how to speak it in a civilian acceptable way.
So should we confess what I said off the air to you, which is feel free to not be so polite,
yeah.
Which now I find funny given what you just said. Communication styles, Nick, what do you find on this? How they fit in corporate America?
I mean, that's a good question. It's probably better for Sheila, who can speak from a corporate viewpoint, just being in higher ed. But, you know, just reacting to the discussion, though, you know, I think it is important just to note that, you know, times are changing. There are more and more women veterans or more and more women service members year over year. And then on the flip side, after those get out, we're seeing actually more and more women rising, both women and minority entrepreneurs, which I think is another important thing to take notice of in terms of what we can do to help support these, because there's no better employer of veterans than a veteran themselves.
David in Stillwater called and said, "I'm a military vet. I left active service in 2010 and had a hard time adjusting. The post-GI Bill paid for school and a living stipend. I went from $9 an hour to over $100,000 as an engineer. The military prizes initiative, but it's a combo of that and also the government benefits that you've earned." And then we heard from Dween in St. Paul, who's a female vet, says, "Got out in the late 70s as a helicopter mechanic. She felt lost because she was an anomaly. People would look at her skills and not find a way to let that translate to them." Is this, you mentioned something, Sheila, a moment ago about some of this is knowing how to market your own skills as a veteran. Maybe in some ways you're educating the company. So how do you do that?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges that veterans face when we're hired by the military, we're recruited. We're recruited for pure potential. We're not coming in with skill sets. We're trained in those skill sets. Now when we go and get recruited the second time by civilians, they're looking for our skill sets. They're hiring for experience. And so we need to be able to translate our experience and show them why we're a fit for that job.
I guess some of that is knowing how to transition out of, well, everybody understood this in the military, in my unit. I didn't need to explain what this was. And again, I think this comes back to what I said about you are as much promoting yourself, but educating the company.
Absolutely.
About, right?
And I think the company, you know, when you're in an interview, you try to ask the same questions of every candidate.
Yeah.
But sometimes you need to go off script because that veteran's going to tell you a story that you don't quite understand, or maybe they're using the word we instead of I. So you need to ask them a follow-up question to get into the roots of that story to really understand the value that person's bringing.
As a hiring manager, you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Call here from Tony in New London. Hi, Tony.
Hello.
Hey. What'd you want to say?
Personally, I kind of wonder, in my experience and a handful of other men that I served with, I didn't know very many female service, but a lot of us, when we get out, I think we left our first job, if not our first two to three of them, because when we join the civilian career field, we're being paid considerably less than we thought we would.
Uh-huh.
You kind of left the service thinking you kind of put some kind of groundwork and time in, and you don't necessarily get recognized for that when you leave. And I think a lot of service members kind of need to also come to the possible terms that while you were in, you kind of donated forward movement in your career life to serve your nation.
Meaning when you say donated, meaning, hey, I could have taken this potential out into the corporate world, but I had service uppermost in my mind. Is that it or what?
Sort of like when you talk about a volunteer firefighter, they get paid around $10 to $13 an hour. They don't do it because of the money. They're not going to be able to gain some kind of experience that'll help them make gobs of extra money in a career field.
Yeah.
But you're donating your time, you're donating what you're capable of doing for your nation, in a sense. And yes, for many people, you join up and you have the GI Bill, and there's definitely benefits to help you get a foot forward in life. But for a lot of people, especially the guys that I knew, it wasn't. You kind of put your life on hold for your nation.
Nick, how do you hear what Tony's adding to this?
Yeah, we hear this a lot, and it's really that helping folks have better expectations of what they're going to see when they take the uniform off. You know, we always, talk about, sometimes you have to be willing to take a lateral or a step back to take two steps forward. And if we look at broader trends, veterans tend to outperform their civilian counterparts in the long run. It's just that first couple of years, there's oftentimes that adjustment period. And so then what can we do to help folks both getting out of the service and employers understand what these barriers and challenges are to make that first or initial fit much better and folks more likely to stay and move up.
You know, Sheila, I'm curious about how many large, let's say Fortune 500 companies have a position like the one that you occupy at Cargill.
Yeah, Carrie, I don't have the exact data on that, but I can tell you in Minnesota, there's a large group of companies that are very military-focused. So there's the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program that mm-hmm. Cargill is a member of. And there's, I believe, about 56 large companies in the Twin Cities that are in Minnesota that are approved by the Yellow Ribbon program, which means that they have to have a military-dedicated person, and they have to have several policies to support guard and reservists and that kind of thing. So it's a very collaborative environment here in Minnesota. And so if I have a great candidate and I don't have the right position for them, I got contacts all over town. I can call up Medtronic or Ecolab or 3M and say, hey, I want to introduce you to this person. So we really work together to support those veterans that are job searching.
There's some pretty powerful networking that you were talking
Absolutely.
About a minute ago, right? Hey, what's the percentage at Cargill of military vets in the workforce?
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't share that employment data, so I don't have a number to share with you today.
You can't say 3%?
No, I'm sorry.
Is it better than 3 or 5%?
Honestly, I don't
know.
It's such a okay. large company, and I don't have access to that data, so unfortunately I don't have a number for you.
Nick, I wanted to ask you about the fact that a number of military vets, by the way, many of them women, got elected to Congress last Tuesday. Is there legislation that you think might be valuable to address what we're talking about this hour? Or does this really have to be done, you know, the way Sheila's doing it at Cargill and some of the other incentive programs we've been hearing?
I think any legislation that helps the Department of Defense in particular partner with nonprofits and employers that are working with nonprofits that are supporting in that transition, employment transition, not just from a career skilling, but helping to, you know, build that pipeline into careers and bridge that supply and demand. There are employers all over the country that are looking for veterans. They just don't know where to find them or quite how to.
How do they not know where to find them, Nick?
Yeah, it's
I mean, I can speak to that a little bit as
well,
a person who's trying to find them.
Yes.
You know, in the past, veterans would go to the VFW and the American Legion, we knew where to find them, or they go to the Workforce Center. Yeah. Now, all those places are not finding the veterans coming to them as much as they used to. So it's a very fragmented population that is all using their own ways and methods of finding jobs, whether it's going on at Monster and Indeed or, you know, getting hired by a family friend. So they are a little bit elusive, and they're not all on LinkedIn, where civilians are all on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So having a multifaceted approach to finding them. And I think the veterans also needed a multifaceted approach to finding the jobs as well.
You know, this is kind of mundane, but would you say, hey, veterans, learn to use LinkedIn because
Absolutely.
It's a pretty powerful place?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nick, I hear you saying, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and they actually offer the premium subscription for free for those that are in transition for up to a year post-transition.
Wow.
All kinds of training on the back end of that for vets.
You know, we talked about technical training a minute ago. Why is it that vets have not flocked to LinkedIn when this is a place where civilians have really figured out how to network? Do you know, Sheila?
Yeah, I think in the military you may be told not to. You know, stay off social media because your job is sensitive. And so you're very close and careful about sharing information. And so I always say it's like building new muscles. You need to take a stab at it and learn something new so that you're going to be successful in your job search.
Nick, sounded like you were going to add something too to that.
Sure. There's also the learning how to use LinkedIn properly too. Because we often see, you know, folks, you know, adding their military photo on their profile. There are certain nuances of how you want to. I mean, because that's basically your online resume, how you want to communicate your military experience in a way that would resonate with a civilian employer. There are all kinds of little tips and tricks that folks need to learn as they're transitioning out.
Hey, Nick, thanks much. Good to have you on the show.
Oh,
really appreciate
pleasure.
It. Sheila, enjoyed nice it. To have you in the studio. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie. Happy Veterans Day to
and
everyone
to
that's
you.
Listening.
And to you. As part of our Veterans Day coverage, you can go to nprnews.org, and you will find stories about veterans, ceremonies commemorating veteran service, And this is cool, a photo gallery of veterans using art to express how they're recovering and dealing with PTSD. All of that at nprnews.org.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.